So we are holding on Lamatessa Bay's 3 lines from the bottom. Okay, so we're in the middle of a discussion as follows. If you have Yasemin, who owns a sheriff, and it goes, so we were discussing the issue. Once the sheriff becomes a moored, then sure they're gonna have to pay.
They all own the sheriff equally.
It doesn't matter whether one of them or all of them equally. Yeah, it doesn't matter. If the pastor is a sheriff they inherited from their father, for that matter, it could be one that they own by themselves. It doesn't really matter for our purposes. The point is, once the animal becomes a moor, there's no question that payment is going to have to be paid. The question is, what happens when it's still a town? So we mentioned yesterday that there was a machlokes of sumchos and the hachamim on that topic, whether we make them pay the chatinezik in that case as well, or whether chatinezik is not paid in that case, only nezik shalom. Then we mentioned yesterday that only when it comes to being a moor, then it'll pay. Or when it comes to being a moor, then it'll pay nezik shalom. Then we also, as opposed to that you'd pay as usual, chatzi nezik for tam and then nezik shalom for more. Then we discussed yesterday, Braisa, that
meant she only gored
once or twice. Yeah.
Three times.
Three times. Yeah. Then we brought yesterday Braisa that mentioned that Rabbi Yaakov. We said Rabbi Yaakov holds chatzi nezik, and we were trying to figure out what Rabbi Yaakov means by that. He can't just mean that if it's tam you pay chatzi nezik. There's no chiddush in that. So we discussed two possibilities. We had Rava's explanation that the animal was a moored, but because Rabbi Yaakov holds in certain dinim like the pillar, in certain dinim like Rabbi Yehuda, in particular he holds like Rabbi Yehuda that a moored still retains what it had at the time, and just on top of it you add the dinim of a moored. Therefore, if you did what's called shmirah pechusa, you did a weaker shmirah for the animal. You didn't put it behind a stormproof door, let's say, but you put it behind a regular door with lock that would stand in the normal wind. Rabbi Yehuda would hold that's good enough for a moor, but not good enough for a tam. Therefore, what we're going to say is that...
A moor is more dangerous.
But according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's the other. According to Rabbi Yehuda learns from a pulpit, which we'll learn at the end of the parak. He learns that you need more shmirah for a tam than you do for a moor. If you do a shmirah pechusa for a moor...
What's the logic?
We'll see when we get to it next topic.
Nothing to do with the fact that you're
saying. No, nothing to do with the fact that nothing. Right. Right. So then, as long as we say that Rabbi Yaakov does also agree with the opinion against Tzumchus that says that in the case of Yisoyim, Chatzi Nezik is collected, that's why Chatzi Nezik is part of the Mu'ad part, but they're higher for the Tam part. Then we had the explanation of Abaya that said the other way around. The apotropos who was responsible for watching this animal didn't watch it at all. Really, then you should be higher for Mu'ad. However, since if we hold that Rabbi Yaakov holds like Tzumchus that the chatzi nezik for tam is not being collected, all that's left is the chatzi nezik for it as more. So in other words, according to Rava's explanation, it comes out that you're paying chatzi nezik for this, even though it's a moor, as if it was still a tam. And according to Abaya, because you're ignoring the moor part, again, because you did do a shmir of kosa, which is good enough for a moor. On the other hand, according to Abaya's explanation, we say that, okay, we're excluding the half that you would be paid as a tam, because we're saying that the Yaakov holds like the opinion of Tzumchus that the Tzumim don't pay Chatzi Nezik for a tam. They're only paying the Chatzi Nezik for a moor. Okay. So,
why aren't they paying the whole thing?
Again, because according to one opinion that we said yesterday, according to the opinion of Tzumchus, the Tzumim do not pay Chatzi Nezik for a tam. They only pay once the animal becomes a moor. So now, we said Rabbi Yaakov holds Chatzi Nezik, Rabbi Yehuda holds Chayev, the Pashtus meaning Nezik Sholim. So one way of looking at it is Rabbi Yaakov is explaining. When Rabbi Yehuda says Machayev, he's not specifying how much, and Rabbi Yaakov clarifies. The other way of looking at it is they are, in fact, arguing. So that brings us now to our Gemara. I'm a little bit by a little bit. Vishlam of Abaya, drama plea, chapter. Okay, according to Abaya, who says that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing. Rabbi Yaakov is saying Chatzi Nezik, and Rabbi Yehuda, in fact, is saying Nezik Shalom. Fine, and we understand the Braisa very well. We understand why we have to say that the Braisa must be talking about a Mu'ad, because it's talking about a Tam that we know Machloit. Both of them would say Chatzi Nezik. Ella le Rava, da amal loy tligi. But according to Rava, who says that actually Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are not arguing. They both agree that it's only Chatzi Nezik, only the Chatzi Nezik that would be done as a tam, because both of them are holding that you ignore the Mu'ad part again, because you did do a Shmir of Kosa. The problem is, ad demuki lo b'Mu'ad, no kum v'tam. Then why do we have to, to begin with, why do we have to shell out, why, why do we have to shell iron the first braisa as talking about a mu'ad? Say it's talking about a tam. Okay, I mean, you know, originally the Gemara said there's no chiddush in it, but still, you know, now the Gemara is going back on that and saying maybe after all, we should say that it's talking about a tam. One of the Mepharshim says, in fact, that before when we said that's the mu'ad, that was Rava's answer. Now the Gemara is challenging that and saying, but what makes Rava, what forces Rava to say that in the first place? Why don't we say, Rava said it, that's the thing, Rava had said it because he figured that, first of all, the Lashon of the second Braisa doesn't sound like it, because otherwise it should clearly say, Rabbi Yehuda says Chayiv Nezek Shalom, and Rabbi Yaakov says Chati Nezek, and also because it should say Elo Chati Nezek according to Rabbi Yaakov. But whatever, the point is, leaving all that aside, what forces us to say, if you're going to say that ultimately, according to Rava, both Rav Yaakov and Rav Yehuda hold that in the case of a mu'ad, you're only paying chatzi nezek, why bother telling us the case of a mu'ad? Tell us that in the case of a tam, that they're both saying that you're still going to pay chatzi nezek, and that's that.
How would you deduce this from a mu'ad?
You wouldn't. In other words, let them tell us in the case of a tam, If the Braisa is presenting, the Yehuda's opinion, and according to Rava, Rav Yaakov is trying to explain the Yehuda's opinion. So why bother mentioning it only in the case of a mu'ad and saying, but they both end up saying that he only pays chatzi nezek? Just say to begin with, the Braisa is talking about the Tam, and yet both of them agree that it's chatzi nezek. And we could say, either of Yehuda, Ja'avid le'shmira p'chusa, Ja'avid le'shmira mu'ula. And furthermore, we could understand it in either of two possible ways. Either we could say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, now remember, we said that Rabbi Yehuda holds that when it comes to a tam, you need shmira ma'ula, you need a high-level security for this animal. When it comes to a tam, since the pasuk says, the law is shmira ma'ula, I'm fine, they didn't guard it at all, but if you guarded it, even with a shmira ma'ula, it's good enough. So in the case of a tam, fine, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the case would be, why would you be chayev? To avad l'shmira, kosev l'avad l'shmira ma'ula, because you did a weaker shmira, you didn't do the strong enough shmira that Rabbi Yehuda holds you need for a tam. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would be saying, you're chayev chatzi nezek.
But what's the reason that he wants a stronger?
Because he learned it from the pasuk. Because he learned it from the pasuk. By a tam, the pasuk never mentions anything about shmira. When it comes to a mu'ad, the pasuk says, "V'lo yishmiranu ba'olah." The owner does not guard it, implying if he guarded it anyway, even if it was a shmirah p'chusa, that's enough to pater him from the din of mu'ad. Rabbi Yehuda will still hold his chayav for it as if it was.
There's no logic.
The logic is that Rabbi Yehuda also holds tad kamus in kaimai medis, which we discussed yesterday. Rabbi Yehuda holds when the animal becomes a mu'ad, the dinim that apply to it as a tam still apply as far as the first half of the nezek. So the guy, if he did a shmira p'chusa, he still will be chayev chatzi nezek as if it was a tam. He can only become chayev for the full nezek, for the other half of the nezek, as a mu'ad, if he didn't do shmira at all. But if he did shmira p'chusa at all. But if he did shmira p'chusa, a regular door with a regular lock, then he's exempted from the din of mu'ad. He's still chayev for the din of tam.
But why should it be chayev for the whole
more than that. He's not. He's only chayav chatzi nezek. Only that's what we're saying. Either Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov learns over there in the Mishnah and the Gemara after it, he learns that even by a tam, shmir of kosa is enough to pater you. So then we could explain that the braisa that we mentioned, that where Rabbi Yaakov is saying chatzi nezek, and again, according to Rava, that Rabbi Yehuda is agreeing with that, might be. We're talking about where according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, you didn't do any shmira at all. Either way, those are good reasons why, in the case of a tam, it would be chayav chatzi nezek. What forces Rava to say that the braisa is talking about a mu'ad in the first place? The Tanya, as in fact we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, echad tam ve'echad mu'ad sheshamar shmira kosev. Certain. He holds that whether a tam, whether a mu'ad, if you do shmira p'chusa, that's good enough, and you're potter from
the mu'ad.
Even by mu'ad, but well, even by tam, even Rabbi Yehuda again holds that by tam you need shmira ma'ula.
Tam is understood.
Okay, but that's we're gonna have over there when we get to it at the end of the parak in a few days. That Hashem, we're gonna talk about those three different opinions on the subject. You have Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holding that shmira p'chusa is enough regardless of the type of animal. You have Rabbi Yehuda holding you need shmira ma'ula by a tam and shmira p'chusa by a mu'ad. And you have Rabbi Elazar who holds that you need, that when it comes to a mu'ad, there is no shmira. Even the strongest shmira is not enough. You have to shech the animal. Otherwise, you're going to be liable for whatever it does. We'll get to that at the end of the paragraph. Anyway.
Now, once he's scored the third time,
that's when you have the three-way opinion. Yeah. Yeah.
Three times and he's finished.
Then, well, that forms a rebel effort. The only thing you can do at that point is draft it. Yeah. So, v'ha'ar kamash malon, and in that v'ha'ar kamash malon Rabbi Yaakov, and if we go that way, then we can say that Rabbi Yaakov's chiddush is d'mamim lehen apotrupas l'tam l'gus migokoi. Then we don't have to say that the Braisa is talking about a muad and talk about, well, why, even though it's a muad, he's only chayav chatzi nezek. We could say the Braisa is telling us the chiddush, the very fact that Rabbi Yaakov holds like a chachamim, that the apotrupas is responsible for arranging chatzi nezek in the case of tam, not like the opinion of Sumchus that we mentioned yesterday, who would say that not. So, again, the question is, according to Rava, what forces him to say that the Braisa is talking about a muad? According to Abaya, necessarily, if they're arguing Nezek Shalom versus Chatzi Nezek, that can only be by a muad. But according to Rava, if everybody is saying Chatzi Nezek, can't you find a case by a time where that would apply? Amalei, Hachi Kamar.
According to Rava, it's Chatzi Nezek, and Rava says it has to be a muad.
No, that's the question. Rava is saying that Braisa is talking about a muad, and we have to find reasons why he would say only Chatzi Nezek. Well, why? Amalei, so Ravina answers him, Hachikama, you're right. What Rava means is, Chada the Isfei Tauti Taimi. Rava holds like this. Given that he holds that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda hold the same way, what Rava wants to do is he would rather say the Braitha is talking about Muad, because then there's many things we can learn from that Braitha. Namely, we don't just have to, if we said it was talking about a Tam, we would only learn the one din. Rabbi Yaakov holds that the Hachamim, that Chatzi Nezek is collected from Yisraelim, but no more than that. Like this, when you say that he's talking about Muad, then like Rava said, we said yesterday, that it means we learn three things about Rabbi Yaakov's Shitta. Guys, we're trying to learn over here. It's tough to be a little quiet. If we say that the Braisa is talking about Muad, then we learn many different things. We learn that Rabbi Yaakov holds that Rabbi Yehuda, as far as the concept of Sad Tamus from Pomeh, that a Muad still retains the dinim that it did at the Tam. We also learn that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda that when it comes to a Tam, you need Shmira Mu'ula, and when it comes to a Muad, you need Shmira Kulta. And we learn that he holds like the Rabbanon that the Chatzi Nezek of the Tam collected Megufa. So by saying that it's a Muad, we're not only learning that one din, we're learning two extra dinim out of it as well. In other words, the answer is you're right, according to that. Rava could very well have said the din is if Zaita is talking about a Tam. But Rava prefers to say the Braisa is talking about Muad because there's more chidushim. There's three chidushim in Rabbi Yaakov's Shita as opposed to just the one. That's one way. There's other Mephoroshim explain. Other Mephoroshim explain. Chodah the Ispei Tauki Taima means something else. That what Rava is saying is once we say that Rabbi Yaakov holds like the Shita, that Yisoymin pay Chatzi Nezek in the case of the Tam, automatically, that makes it possible to learn the Braisa according to either way. Once he establishes that point, then that automatically makes it possible to learn the Braisa as talking about a Tam, or equally well as talking about a Mor. Chodidi if they try to time it. He has one explanation, which includes in it two possibilities.
Hey!
We're trying to learn Torah over here. If you want to go, if you want to make noise, go over there, go outside, whatever. So far we had two possibilities of how to explain Rabbi Yaakov versus Rabbi Yehuda. Are they not arguing according to Rava? Are they arguing according to Abaya? And if they're arguing according to Abaya, then what are they arguing about? They're arguing on the point of whether you're going to pay Chatzi Nezek for a time or not. Now we have more possibilities. Ravina Amar, Rishus Mishana Ikibinai. Ravina says here's another possibility. We could say that the machloitis between Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda, we will say, like Abaya, that they are arguing, not like Rava, that they both agree. However, we can explain their argument in a different way. Not that they're arguing whether Yisraelim pay Chatzi Nezek or not, but rather, Rishus Mishana Ikibinai. They're arguing on the point of whether a change of Rishus causes a change in the status of the animal, which is something that we discussed yesterday. We said there's a machlokes on that point only. The change of rishus of the animal, when the animal goes into a different rishus, does it have a different status there? she's going to have a moored bittersweck. She's going to have a moored. Suppose that the animal became a moored while, for example, now we mentioned yesterday, the original case you mentioned, it wasn't just the
slave. It becomes a moored by an action. No.
It becomes a moored by Adam coming to Beis Din and testifying that it bored three times.
By its action.
Fine, but you still need the Adam. You still need the Aedus to
Beis,
and
but,
you need
but,
to put
We discussed yesterday the possibility,
which is in fact the halacha. We had a machlokes panoyim about it, but the halacha is in fact that reshus, according to the vast majority of poskim, that reshus v'shana, that yes, the change of reshus caused the change in the status of the animal. Why that is, we discussed yesterday the possibility. Is it because the hadah, the warning, does not transfer from one person to another? Therefore, yes, it became a muad under one owner, but now it's under a different owner, so that warning does not transfer and it starts all over. Or there was a reason that the Me'iri gave that, practically speaking, when it's under a different ownership, when it's under a different control of a different person, it may well change its behavior. Anyway, so going to have a moored. Suppose now that the animal was moored while the apotropos had control over it.
We cannot have you brought down to a moored. We are trying to learn. Please, go outside. Go someplace else. Do not keep running back.
Hey, here's my make a noise. Right. Go downstairs.
We absolutely need to go through the and it keeps on coming. So what are we supposed to do? Excuse me. We haven't learned your role of three hats to think of. We want to hear every single night. We have more than three than you. Please, let us learn and teach. Control your children. Thank you.
You're making a shut up.
We're going to make clear. Why is your shadow brachos more important than our children? Make your shadow brachos different than his. Control your children that they don't fulfill them. That's all I'm asking.
So, reshus mashana ikibinai. Going to have a moored. Suppose now that the animal became a moored while the apotropos had control of the animal. So three times it gored and three times Adam came and testified. Benisbakeach acheresh, now the cheresh, who was the original owner of the animal, became healthy again, and now he's able to hear and speak. Benishtapa hashoita, or the shoita became normal again. The higdala cotton, or the cotton grew up, and now it goes back to their reshus. Therefore, we would say, Rabbi Yehuda Saba Harer Vachaskot, Rabbi Yehuda was holding that he came Nezek Shalom, holds it, retained its original chazaka. It was a moored before, it stays a moored now. Rabbi Yaakov Saba Rishus Mishana, where Rabbi Yaakov would hold that the change of Rishus caused the change in the status of the animal, and it goes back to being a pound, and therefore only happy
now. That's automatic?
That's according to Rabbi Yaakov, yeah, it's automatic. Turn it up on. More on this topic of what apotropsim are responsible for. And again, we're going to focus mainly, we talked yesterday that an apotropos, in principle, there could be. You could have an apotropos, like we just said now, there could be an apotropos for a show that belongs to somebody who became a cheresh or a shoita. Primarily, we're going to be focusing on the case where there's an apotropos for a kabbalah. So, turn it up on. Apotropos in Mishalman Minhaliyah, the apotropos pays, when Nezek Shalom is going to be paid, they pay Minhaliyah, they pay out of the best of their nechassim, just like anybody else. We discussed yesterday.
Excuse me, that's
not
going
to work.
We are
moving.
Can I help?
Yeah, everyone's here.
We talked yesterday about that. Whether it's taken directly to the assignment or whether the apotropos has to lay it out and eventually get paid back from the assignment. Here we go according to that second opinion. Well, can't the children play someplace else? Is there a reason why this has to be their playground out there? So let the parents control their children. That is what's supposed to be done. Well, then that's all. I'm sorry. I don't really have time to sit and talk about it at length. You have a 1 hour shear to cover one block of Gemara. If downstairs in the middle, then we're going to have davening in the middle. That also disrupts. So it's much easier to have the children not disrupt us than it is to not be disrupted by davening, which happens at a scheduled time. So please, ask the parents to control their children and have them sit quietly, or have them go play outside. There's a whole outside there to play. However, the apotropsin do not pay kober. Now we're focusing on a different matter. Till now, we've been talking about yizok. Assured damages, assured of yisoyim and damages somebody else's share, then nezek has to be paid.
Alright, can you close the door? We have a short.
What?
Why don't they use stairs on that side?
Okay. Take the children, bring them over there, and that's it.
They can be quiet, it's not so bad. It's when they're noisy. Okay, the apotropsin mishalman minhaliyah, they do pay minhaliyah again when nezek is done. Now, what happens if instead the shur killed the person? Now, we know the Torah tells us, again, the first three times the shur does it, it's a tam. The shur is supposed to be killed, shukhsakhu yisakhul asher. However, if for whatever reason it doesn't, and the Gemara is going to talk about tomorrow possibility how that could happen, then eventually, once it becomes a muad, there is koifer to be paid as well. There's koifer, which we're going to discuss soon. There's a certain amount of money that is supposed to be paid from the mazit to the nizik estate. Now we're saying apotropsin do not pay such koifer. So, now why shouldn't they have to pay koifer? There's two ways of looking at what the koifer is. One way of looking at it is that the koifer is mamon. It's essentially a person was killed. You have to pay their heirs the value, you know, lahavda, like you have nowadays. When there was an accident or whatever, you pay the family for the person's lost earnings or whatever, you know, for the fact that they lost their family breadwinner, etc. That's one way of looking at it. That's called kufra mamon. The other way of looking at it is it's a matter of kapara. Your ox, your behemoth killed somebody. Therefore, you are responsible. You have to have a kapara. You were careless. It happened. This has been happening several times already, and you haven't been careful. You are responsible to make you now by rights you should be chayav mitzvah b'deishamayim. Instead, the Eved still lets you get away with a monetary fine. That way of looking at it is called kufra kapara.
Why should it be?
Because his shur already has killed people three times, and he didn't take care of it. But who had river all of his owner was ruined. The lo yishmeranu, and he hasn't guarded it.
If he kills a person, he dies innocently in the first place.
That's what I just mentioned before. The Gemara is going to talk about tomorrow various possibilities, how it could happen, that it becomes a moor. We'll get to that tomorrow. For now, let's...
He kills an animal or something.
Yeah. But it can happen with people also. I mean, one straightforward example is it killed three people, and nobody actually came to Beis Din yet to give Avis. Again, until Avis is given, nothing happens. The status doesn't change. Whatever the case, we'll talk about tomorrow various scenarios that it could happen. The fact of the matter is it can happen that it comes the third time or the fourth time or whatever, the animal is killing a person. At that point, we make the owner responsible for a koifer. So again, is the koifer basically to compensate the nizik family for the fact that now the nizik is lost, that now their breadwinner is lost, etc.? Or is it a kapara, is it that really by rights at this point the guy should be chayav mitzvah b'dei shamayim, and the eved should let them get away with a monetary take? That's called kufra kapara. Now, if we say kufra kapara, then it's a different matter when it comes to yisoyim. Yisoyim are below bar mitzvah. They're not subject to the concept of kapara. That's what the Gemara is going to discuss. So man tana kufra kapara. Which tana is it that holds that the kofer is considered a kapara? Is for the purpose of kapara? And that liyakri lav bnei kapara ninu. And that yisoyim therefore are not subject to kapara. That is the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yechim ben Breuken. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braita, when the Pasuk says v'nosen pidyon nafsho, the Pasuk says that the owner has to pay a pidyon for his neshama. What is that? Whose value is it? Pidyon nafsho v'pashtos means the value of his life. Whose life? Dmei nizik. The Tanakhama says it means the value of the nizik, the value of the person who was killed, basically figures out how much he would have been worth as an eved or what have you, and that's the amount that the mazik has to pay.
To the
nizik family. Rabbi Shmuel, Bnei Yisrael, Rabbi Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael, Bnei Mazik. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel says that it's Bnei Mazik, it's the value of the Mazik. So, my love, the Hakam Mitzvah. So, according then, that would be the underlying Machlokas. The Rabbanon Sabri Kufr Mamonahu. The Rabbanon would be holding that Kufr as Mamon. Therefore, just like any other case, just like if the Shoda injured the guy, you would pay for his medical bills and his Nezik and his sire. And not actually, you wouldn't pay for his sire and then before you whatever we said before, because the Shoda. But whatever, the point is you'd pay for his Nezik. You'd figure out how much was his value reduced by this goring, by this injury, and pay accordingly. By that logic, if we say that Kofar is Mom and Bechor, it would be the same thing. You go according to the value of the Nizek. Rabbi Shmuel, Bnei Shor, Rabbi Yechim, and Bereka, Sava Kofar Kapara. Whereas we would say that Rabbi Shmuel, Bnei Shor, Rabbi Yechim, and Bereka hold that it is a Kapara. And therefore, the logic is, therefore, it should be according to the value of the Mazik. He himself should have been Kayyid Mitzvah B'dei Shemayim. Therefore, he has to buy himself out by paying his own value to the Nizek. So if we go that way, if we say Kofar Kapara, then again, that would explain why an apotropos does not pay it on behalf of the yisoyim, because they're yisoyim, they're below by mitzvah age, they're not subject to kapara. Why don't we say he lays it out, and then he'll get reimbursed from the yisoyim later, like we discussed yesterday. The reason is because since yisoyim and baklava are not shy of kapara, he'd have no ground to be able to collect it from them later. Mele nizokin, fine, he lays it out, he eventually collects from them, because essentially they are chayav to pay nizokin, but they're not essentially chayav to pay kofar. Okay, so actually the Marshal says there may be a distinction over here whether he's an apotropos, whether this apotropos was appointed by the father before he died, or whether he was appointed by Beis Din. If he was appointed by the father, sure, he stands exactly in the place of the father, then he's at the very least he's high of the coat for the fact that he himself wasn't careful with the animal. Whereas if Beis Din appointed him, we said yesterday we don't want to discourage people from becoming apotropos, therefore maybe we won't make him liable for the coat.
Well, then they'll be careless.
No, because the fact is there's still going to be nezek paid. We're just talking about there's still going to be nezek. The shor is still going to require skila, etc. There's still going to be damages involved. There's just not going to be kosher. Anyway, I'm going to pop a loy. So the papa says not necessarily. We could argue that both the chachamim and Rabbi Shmuel both hold that kosher is a kapara. So the only machlokas is Rabbanan Sabi b'din Nizek Shemin and Rabbi Shmuel. Now, Rabbi Yechim and Rabbi Sabi b'din Mazik Shemin. Both of them agree that it's essentially a matter of kapara. Both of them agree that it is essentially a matter of kapara. They're just, no, not for the Nizek. The Nizek doesn't need kapara. But one way of looking at it is you accomplish the kapara by paying the value of the Nizek, and the other is you accomplish the kapara by paying the value of the Mazik. But both of them might hold that it's not mumma, per se. So my time is the Rabbanon. What would be the Rabbanon's reason? Why would they say if it's kapara, why should it be Dmei Nizek? They say Nemra Shisa Lamata v'Nemra Shisa Lamayla, because you have two psukim in Parshas Tzvotim. You have two sections in the Torah back to back that use the shortish shot, which means to place. One case is where two people are fighting. One of them accidentally hits a pregnant woman and makes her miscarry. The pasuk says he has to. The one who hit her has to pay kasher yoshis ala bala isha, according to the amount that the husband will set upon him. Meaning, in other words, they go to Beis Din. The husband explains to the Beis Din that his wife was pregnant. He brings Adim, etc. Beis Din figures out how much she. They figure out what's the difference in value, how much she was worth pregnant versus how much she's worth not pregnant, which is the equivalent, basically, of the value of the baby. And the mazik pays accordingly.
So how do you figure the equivalent?
Because for example, if you were selling a woman as a slave woman, if you were selling her as an eved, they're worth more pregnant. Yeah. Not the eved, but something else. But So now there, obviously, yushak sol akasha yosha sol bala isha. Necessarily, what are you paying? You're not paying your own value. You're paying the value of the baby, the value of the nizik. Now, when it comes to a shur killing, when it comes to the kofar, the pasuk says, "B'chol asher yushat olo," same church. Therefore, the rabbanon hold that we have a comparison over there. So therefore, the nizik value. So, nemer shisa lamata and nemer shisa lamayla. It says shisa two times. Malahalim bin nizik, afkan bin nizik. Just like by the case of the woman with the baby, necessarily what you're paying is the value of the nizik. So also over here, it should be the value of the nizik. And the Poshim discusses, is it an actual Zeta Shava, or is it just Gili Mil Sub Alma, it's called, that we see from that comparison, we clarify that when the Torah uses the word sheet, what it means, whatever. Anyway, so therefore the value of the Nidin. Rabbi Shmuel, Bnei Shira, Rabbi Yechim, and Bnei Kasava. No, the fact is, the Torah says, V'nothin Pidyon Nafshik Tziv. Yes, but the Torah says he should give a redemption for his wife. B'chorah, meaning the Mazik's wife. Therefore, it should be his own value. V'rabbonon, and then Rabbonon answers. That's the Pasuk, V'nothin Pidyon Nafshik, yeah. So very nice, you have your Shisa, but Pidyon Nafshik. V'rabbonon, and the Rabbonon answer, Ein Pidyon Nafshik Tziv. True, it says Pidyon Nafshik, therefore there's no question it is a Koker. However, the actual amount you pay based on the Shisa-Shisa comparison is the value of the Nidin. So in other words, it comes out that everybody agrees that you are paying it as a matter of kapara. Pidyon Nafshay means the value of his life. So whose life? That's the question. That's the question. Rabbi Shmuel figures that if it's supposed to be a pidyon for your own life, then it should be your own value. But I'm going to say yes. But on the other hand, since you have Shisa-Shisa, therefore, it means that you are paying a kapara for yourself. However, the amount you're paying a kapara for yourself is the value of the other guy. So, therefore, the bottom line is the same. Right. The bottom line is, though, that everybody agrees. Because that's not how it works. Because that's not what the Torah is saying. The Torah is saying, Pidyon Nafshay, it means one or the other. It's not going to matter. Yeah, but it's not. It's going to be a regular thing. It's always going to be one, or it's always going to be the other. There's no change in who's worth more and who's worth less. There's more family than that. Anyway, the bottom line is, going back to that, is why we're saying that the apotropos does not pay the kofar on behalf of the yisoimim, because the yisoimim, the ikhtanim, they're not subject to the whole matter of kapara. Continues the Gemara. Mishamach le Rava le Rav Nachman be Rav Acha b'Yakov to Adam Rava. Rava one time praised to Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman was Rava's Rebbe. So one time Rava was sitting by Rav Nachman and praising Rav Acha by Yaakov that he's a great person, he's a great Tamakah. Amalei, so Rav Nachman tells him, fine, Shiyava Liyotka, the next time he comes to you, have a year with Yavi, bring him to me. Let me see what he's made of. Ki also Lagabe, so sure enough, the next time Rav Acha by Yaakov came, Amalei, so Rav Nachman tells him, Poyiminai Milsa, ask me something. As a famous, you know, you can tell a lot about a person from the kind of question. Well, no, you can tell a lot about a person from the kind of questions he asks. Ask me a question in Torah, and from that I'll get an idea what kind of common problem you are. Bomine, Torah of Achabah Yaakov asks him like this. Shur shal shnei shutfin, keitz mishamen kofer. What if you have a shur that belongs to two partners? How is kofer paid? Do we say the Shalom High Kofer, the High Kofer? Do we say that each one pays their own individual Kofer, so therefore the Nizik family ends up getting twice Kofer? Problem is, Kofer Achad, I'm not one of those, no Kofer. But the Torah says you pay Kofer, the in Kofer you shut all of, implying one Kofer, not two. High Chatzi Kofer, the High Chatzi Kofer. Do you say maybe that each one of them pays half of the Kofer, so together you have one whole one? Okay, kofer shalom or nachman of like chatzik kofer, but the Torah says you have to make kofer implying the whole thing, not half. So either way, how do you work it out? That's the Rabbi Chava Yakra. Ad Yosef Kama Ainba, while Rabbi Nachman was sitting and thinking into it to try and figure out an answer, Amalei. So it wasn't a stupid question at all. It was a deep question. Yeah, Amalei. So Rabbi Chava Yakra says, let me ask you something else. Now, we learned the Mishnah in Erech. If you have somebody who owes an Erech to the Beit Mikvah and they don't pay it, we take a Mashkin from them. Erech is a person says Erech Yolai or Erech Plain Yolai. They owe a certain amount to Hektish depending on the age and gender of the person, as it says in Harfish Kodzai. If they don't pay up, then a Mashkin is taken from them. Who takes the Mashkin? There's different possibilities. Rashi says it's the Gizbar. Various other Rishonim say maybe it's the Beis Din, whatever, without getting into that detail. The point is, we do take a Mashkin from him because since there's no Kapara involved, the person may get careless. Okay, so I made a Neder of an error. I'm not getting around to paying it now. Yeah, I'll pay it some other time. I'm in no hurry. Therefore, we take a Mashkin from him in order to hurry him up to get him to pay us. On the other hand, if somebody is chayav, a chatas, or an asham, we do not take a mashkin from them, the Mishnah says. The reason is because a person has to bring a chatas or an asham because of an aveira they did, they need a kapara. the person themselves.
They themselves want to do it.
Exactly. They themselves are going to want to do it. They, we shouldn't have to take a mashkin from them to force them to do it. We expect that they themselves are going to feel the need. So, now, as opposed to that, so now the question becomes, Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov asks, Chayav Kofin, right? What about a case where somebody is Chayav Kofin? For sure, having killed somebody. Kivin de Kapora, who, since we had just established before that the Kofor is meant as a matter of Kapora, then Kachatas for Asham Dami, then it is considered like a Chatas or an Asham, Michmer Chomer Ulevei, therefore the person considers it a very serious thing, Veloi Boi Mashkune, therefore maybe Basin or the Nizik's own family or whoever it is should not have to take any Mashkin from him. Tosis, by the way, says that the question is on the Yoshim of the Nizik himself. Maybe are they the ones able to take a mashkin? Again, there's other Rishonim discussed that maybe it's not them, maybe only the Beis Din is empowered to do that. Whatever. Is anybody empowered to do that? Maybe not. Since the Kapara, maybe the guy himself is going to feel a guilty conscience until he does it, and therefore you don't need a mashkin. Or Duma, or maybe not. Given to the Chavre who the boy makes for the Mamayna, who, since after all, this money is just supposed to be going to the other party, it's supposed to be going to the Nizik family, the Loyla Gaboya, who, and it's not going to the Eivishter, it's not going to Hektish, like Chatas or an Asham. V'loi Chomer Alei, therefore he doesn't consider it maybe so serious. Uboi Mashkune, maybe therefore you do need a Mashkin in order to force him to do it. Because he may think, okay, Hektish is Chatas or an Asham is something, I owe it to the Eivishter, that's serious business, I better get it paid up. But a Poker, yes, it's a Kapara, but it's a Kapara that I'm accomplishing to pay the other guy, maybe the guy may get careless in that. Inami, or you could argue differently. You could argue another reason why maybe you would say that in the case of Kofor, maybe you do have to force him by taking a mashkin from him. Kivin de Hulay Chota, since after all, he's not the one directly who did the Avera. Umamone who does it, it's just his mom and his shur that caused the hezek. V'loy Chomer Alei, maybe again, therefore, he doesn't consider it so serious. V'loy Chomer Milfer Alei, he doesn't consider it so serious. Uboy Mashkune, and again, that would be another reason to take a mashkin from him. Amalei, so Rav Nachman tells him, Shavkin. Leave me alone. In other words, it's enough you ask the first question. I was already stumped by your first question. There are a couple of Achronim who talk about maybe the connection between the two questions. Maybe in the second question, Rav Acha bar Yaakov was trying to hint to Rav Nachman that maybe there is a way of entering the first question. And therefore, according to that, maybe actually Rav Nachman says, you know what, you're right. You made me realize I should have had an answer to the first one. In practice, though, what we end up with is Rav Nachman apparently didn't know an answer to either one of these questions. The Rambam, in fact, Haskins will chumra in both. He holds, in the case of the Shutfin, you do make each of them pay a whole koifer, and in the case of the Mashkin, we do take a Mashkin. Some of us can discuss why that should be. It's on the face of it, it's a matter of moments, Sophic Hamot Machabel Haraya. And so there's various answers, of which one of them, the Lacha Mishnah, answers that I'm, since we're saying the whole thing is a matter of kapara, when it comes to kapara, we want to be modest. We want to make sure that they have their proper kapara. Therefore, a whole kofor from each one of the shuktim, and therefore, if they don't pay, and therefore, if the person doesn't pay it, then we take a mashka. It's positive.
I mean, that's
not
the only thing we could have given.
Well, Rav Nachman would have wanted to prove it from a Mishnah or a Braise or something. He didn't have any, but the Rambam is holding. Again, not everybody agrees with the Rambam on that. There are other Rishonim who are maple on one or both. In practice, I mean, when it comes to dinim that don't apply nowadays, dinim knossos don't apply nowadays because you don't smoke in, practically speaking, the Rambam is the only one who Rishonim passes on these things. Therefore, by default, I'll offer Braise. But in a way, it's kind of built to the Mashiach. When Mashiach comes, then we'll see. Well, that was the question. That was the question. That is true. Tosha says that's part of the question. That's the difference. Mele, if two people, for example, eat chalev, or two people break Shabbos or whatever, fine. Hektish is not gaining from the fact that they're getting an extra habit. Here, the Nizik family is gaining by getting an extra kosher. Should they be doing that or not? Again, the Rambam is asking that yes. Turn it up. Shalai b'chezkas tam. What happens if a person borrows an animal, assuming that it was a tam? V'nimtza mu'ah. And in the end, it turns out that he's a mu'ah. Now, if he knew to begin with, ordinarily the rule would be that the shoyel, or any kind of shomer, becomes chayev for the nizakin of the animal as long as it's in his rishus. So if he borrowed the animal and then it starts goring in his rishus, he's the one who would be on the hook to pay for it. Now the case is that he knew started, he thought it was a tam, and it turns out that it's a mu'ah.
He didn't check.
The chesed, it had a chazaka, whatever. Yeah. Wait.
Who is he supposed to check from?
He should ask
from whoever he's borrowing it.
Yes, he could have asked.
The person he's borrowing it from should know.
That's what we're going to discuss. Wait. Bilam the Shaman Hatsi Nezik.
Unless he lied to him.
Hold on. Wait. I'll tell you something soon that the Marshal said on that. Wait. The Nimsa Mu'ud, and it turns out that the animal is a Mu'ud. Bilam the Shaman Hatsi Nezik. In that case, the owner is responsible for the Hatsi Nezik. The Shoyo the Shaman Hatsi Nezik, and the Shoyo pays the other Hatsi.
They split it.
On the other hand, another case, Huad Bevei Shoyal. What if the animal becomes a Muad Wallace by the Shoyal? The Wallace by the Shoyal it gores three times, and testimony is brought to Beis Din, and therefore it becomes a Muad.
That's Zidoy Le Bailam,
and then he returns it to the owner. Then Bailam, Shaman, Hatinezek, the Shoyal Potem the Tum. Then in that case, the owner pays Hatinezek, and the Shoyal does not pay anything. We're going to discuss. Wait. I know. Of course it seems odd. That's why the Gemara is going to discuss it. So let's start with the first one. We said that the animal turned out to be Muad to begin with before you ever borrowed it. Then we're saying you as the shoyl are going to be responsible for Hatsi Nezek, and the owner is going to be responsible for the other Hatsi. Now, the question is, why is the shoyl higher for that Hatsi Nezek? That might. Lemele, why can't the shoyl argue that? Lemele, let us tell them, Torah She'ili, Ariel She'ili. I borrowed an ox. I didn't know that I'm borrowing a lion. I didn't know I'm borrowing a dangerous animal. Why should
because
I
not know? He knew it was a cow.
But any animal starts out of a cow. Omar Rav, Hocha, my opinion, the Rav says, you know what Rav says, you know what the case we're talking about over here? Shehikir boy shehu naka. The case is that, let's say...
Well, is there an intermediate...
That's what we're going to say. Listen. Shehikir boy shehu naka. Let's say the Shoyal knew ahead of time that this animal is prone to gore. It hasn't necessarily done it three times. So it hasn't become an official Mu'ah.
But it's happened
already. Yeah.
So that's
the point.
But once he knows that it is officially still a cow,
but he knows already that it's prone to goring, and there are other Rishonim, actually the Rashba, I think, learns that Hikur Bashar Nakhon means it may even be that it gored three times, but for whatever reason, it hasn't been become
there
a
no
more
agent,
yet. There was no agent, or Goyim, or whatever, all the different topics.
And he knew that.
So then the question is, the name of the so therefore he's on the hook for Hatinez. Fine, the question is, the name of a Tam She'ili Mu'ad Lo She'ili. Fine, at least let him say, though, okay. But I thought I'm borrowing a Tam animal. The fact is, legally, it's still a Tam. I didn't know I'm borrowing a Mu'ad. Why did he get out of it that way? The answer is, Mishum Da'am Alay. True, but the owner can answer back to him. Okay, fine, you thought it was a Tam. E Tam Hava, Pauga Nizka Boris Shalomi. Look, if you knew already that it's prone to goring and it's still legally considered a Tam, fine, you'd still be on the hook for Hatsi Nezek. Therefore, Hashnami, Zoshin Pavla, to go now pay Hatsi Nezek. That Pavaniska. Okay, the name of Lay, still, why can't the Shoyal bring up another possibility? Let him say, Tam having a Shtalami Gufay. Let him answer that, you know what, true, but if it was a Tam, the Hatsi Nezek would only be paid out of the body of the animal. I wouldn't come out of my own nechassim. It would come out of the value of the animal. So why are you making me? Why are you putting me on the hook to share in the nezek with you without paying out of my nechassim? Because that's how it works with a tam. Because that's how it works with tam.
It's still a
tam,
yeah.
Yes. If it was still a tam, that's the point.
The guy tam, they're not killing the animal.
We're not talking about killing the animal. We're talking about a damaged oxen, not people. It's a tam and more as far as animals.
The oxen.
Yeah. So it would be paid in the gufa. It wouldn't be paid out of my nechassim. The answer is Mishum Da'am Alay. Yes, the Bailam can answer right back. Okay, but after all, wouldn't you have had to pay me for an ox? Yes, if we were to say that Hatsi Nezek is paid out of the value of the ox, what would happen? It would mean, in other words, that you borrowed this ox. Now some of it is being sold. Now the ox is being sold off to pay for the nezek. Therefore, you would have had to reimburse me with an ox anyway. So therefore, you're still paying. It would still end up coming out of your nechassim in one way or the other. Because the ox is sold, and then half of the money is used to pay, and the half up to the value of the ox.
Why does the ox have to be sold?
Because how else? That's what it means.
Well, they can use their own money.
If he wants to use his own money, fine. He's arguing that the payment was done out of the ox. But the Bailam will argue, yes, but in that case, what it amounts to is you borrow the ox and you're not able to return it to me. So one way or the other, in other words, if there was Hatsi Nezek of $100, and this show is worth $100 one way or the other. Either you're going to be $100 out of pocket, or you would have had to sell off the animal to raise the $100, and then you would have to reimburse you for no longer dollar animal. So either way, you're out $100. Why should it go there? Boy, yes.
What's the difference in an ox and a bull?
A bull, I think, is castrated, often or not, but I don't know. That's two different names.
Bull.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay, bull.
Okay, whatever. Maybe it's the other way around. Whatever. There's two different names for the same animal.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, same thing. Anyway, now, Tosis does add one detail over here. Because we're saying that it would only be paid from the value of the ox, then yes, the chassi nezek that this shoyl is going to be paying is only up to the value of the ox, just like any regular chassi nezek. Which even though
a female cow,
then all he's going to pay is 100, right?
Okay. A female would be a poro.
Would be a poro, right? Okay. How about another point? The name alay, fine. Why can't the shoyl argue something else? The animal was assumed to be a tam, and now it turns out it's a moor. So why can't the shoyl argue like this? Eat tam hava, but you know what? If this animal had remained a tam all this time, like this, I was under the assumption that it was a tam, and it turns out that it really is a moor. Now, if it were a tam, hava moidina umiftirina, I would have been able to be moide, and moide b'knas potter. We said before that Kauganizka, we said we had a machlokes before whether chassi nezek is knas or moide. If we take the view that it is knas, which in fact is halacha, then moide b'knas potter. You can be moide on it before Adam comes to Basin, and you'll be potter. Why doesn't the shoyl should be able to say, I would have admitted it, and therefore I wouldn't have had to pay anything? And even if you're going to go according to the opinion that chassi nezek is really a payment of mama and that it's not considered a knaf, considered like any regular payment, still, name alay, let the shoyl have a different argument. E tambu, if the animal had remained a tam, and remember the payment is being taken out of the value of the animal itself, what I could have done is I would have made the animal run off into the meadows, meaning it wouldn't have been in my rishus anymore, and they wouldn't have been able to collect payment. They wouldn't have been able to collect payment. That the shoyl should be able to argue. No, no, not Mishana Rishus. The fact is, they would only be able to collect the payment if the shoyl was around for them to be able to evaluate and figure out the value of it. I could have arranged that the shoyl won't be in my property. No, because they have to still know how much the chassi nezek is. Again, remember, the chassi nezek is capped at the value of the shoyl. If the shoyl is not around, they have no way of knowing whether the shoyl is worth $10 or $100 or $1,000. Now, the real question is, Tosfos brings up the point, wouldn't that be Shaloi Kadin? How did he have the right? How did he even have the right to argue that I would have made it run away to the meadow and therefore unjustly deprive the other guy of his meadow? So Tosfos discusses, first of all, the possibilities are, So Tosfos starts by saying, first of all, we had the two opinions the other day of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, whether it's the ox itself is under a shibud for the nezek, or whether there's a general shibud on the guy's mechatzis. If you go according to Rabbi Shmuel, that there's a general shibud on the guy's mechatzis, all you're doing by making the ox run away, it's sort of an indirect hezek. It's called mazik shibud eshochaver. You're damaging the other guy's ability to collect on his shibud. And we said the other day that you're potter. It doesn't make it the right thing to do, but it's less of a direct thing. Grama, and therefore it's less of a direct hezek than actually a point where the point of Akiva, who says that literally the nizek now becomes a partner in the animal. Anyway, so Tosfos says that no, the guy doesn't mean literally I would have made it run away. He just means I had the option to do that. Therefore, the nizek would have known that I'm able to do that. Therefore, what would have happened is the nizek would have figured to himself, you know what, if I make the guy pay full chassi nezek, then he may make it run away to the meadows and I'll end up with nothing. Better, let me make up with him, fine, let me make a compromise with him. He'll pay me some token amount, maybe not the full chassi nezek, but some token amount. Okay, so the Truma Kadeshin deals further with this. He says, but still, how does that work? How do you have the ability to do that? So the Truma Kadeshin answers a couple of answers, one of them being, true, not necessarily saying that you're allowed to do that, but the guy has the ability to go to Beis Din and say, you know what, I would have done it. The fact of the matter is, I could have done an Aveira if I wanted. I could have done extortion like that. Therefore, I would mean I would make me a Bala Veda. Okay, but the Nizek has no way of knowing that I don't want to be a Bala Veda. Therefore, still, what are you putting me on the hook for the whole thing when I would have had the capability of doing that and getting out of it? And then on top of it, now
that I'm... made of mixer.
It's not really made of mixer, no. Okay.
A little bit.
Okay. So now comes the Maharshal and says, after all said and done, what are you talking about? How would Basin even accept such a claim I could have done an Aveda? So therefore the Maharshal says, going back to what you were saying before, Robin, that after all, over here, the Shoyal, in a way, has a valid claim against the original owner. You original owner, you knew the animal was a Mord. Why didn't you tell me anything? Therefore, in a case like that, where he himself was wronged to begin with by the Balabas, maybe then he would have the ability to argue my Rikne Lilagma, and therefore I'd make the whole thing fall on your head.
Since you didn't tell me and you that the Shoyal was a Mord, then I would have had the right to say, let my Shoyal run
but
away.
That's effectively, that's Maharshal says, that's what you want to mean. Because you misled me by not telling me that, therefore I have the right sort of to get back to make it that now the whole thing is going to fall on your head, that you're going to be responsible for the whole thing. Me, as far as I'm concerned, the Shur will run away to the meadows, and the whole Chiyuv will fall on you. But not other than that, Maharshal says very strongly you have no right to make any kind of unethical or illegal, or any kind of extortionate claim.
Extortion.
Yeah.
Sure, extortion.
Anyway, the bottom line is, the Shoyal on the face of it, however you explain it exactly, the Shoyal seems to have a valid claim that not necessarily would I have ever been on the hook to pay Chatzi Nezek, even though the animal is a tam, why should I have to be responsible for Chatzi Nezek now? I would have had ways of getting out of it, one way or the other. El or no. Hachab Ma'eskin, and no, rather we have to say a different scenario. We're going to ask in Beidin of a Tafsay. We have to say that the case over here is that before any of this would have had a chance to happen, Beidin went ahead and grabbed a hold of the animal in order to arrange payment for the nizik. Therefore, the guy does not have the ability.
Which animal?
The animal that caused the nizik. The shore that caused the nizik.
I didn't Beidin get a hold of that animal.
They could send a shliach.
They send a shliach, yeah. That, which is actually going to be the next thing the Gemara is going to say. Wait. So therefore, in other words, so the guy does not have the ability to say now I would have been moida. It would have been too late now. There are Rishonim who have a different girsa, not that Beiskin would have taken it, but the Baal Din would have taken it. And once the Baal Din takes it, the Baal Din has taken it, then already, he's the nizik. He's the muchzik in it now. Now it's much harder to get it out of it.
He has a lunch.
Okay, so the question is, fine, now ask the other way around. Why should the owner of the animal have to pay the other chatzi nezek? Namely, why can't he argue to the shoyal, I was caused a loss by you. You've caused the shoyal to be grabbed by somebody who I have no standing in based in again. Now, okay, Tosfos says he wasn't mocked to me a diet, but the point is, once the animal gored, the shoyal should realize that, based in or the Baal Din, as the case may be, is going to hurry over here and take the shur as soon as possible. And they're
around in the street without any kind of adult.
Maybe not. I don't know. But the point is, once the shur already gored, the shoyal, the owner should argue to the shoyal, you should have been responsible right away to go grab the shur and lock it up so they can't go and grab it. You are responsible, and why should I?
Okay.
The answer is Mishum de Omalei, yes, but the Shoyal can answer back. I had doubt in Nihalah. True, but let's say I had returned the Shoyal to you. Never mind that. Even if I had returned to you, Lav Minach Havashakulei. Wouldn't they have taken it from you anyway? So there's no greater law caused by them taking it from me than caused by them taking it from you. Either way, you're out of shirt. Yeah? Okay. Okay, again, but namely, I doubt in the LA.
I'm out in China as a fool. Why didn't you properly take care of the shirt in the first place? It wasn't worth anybody.
Again, the case is where the animal was, the shirt thought the animal was calm, it turned out that it's more. So the responsibility really is on the owner, the fact that it was more. Okay, the name alay, fine. Why can't we still say though that the balabas now should be able to argue to the shoyal? The same argument that we said before, the shoyal could say to the balabas, I had doubt in the alay, if you had returned the animal to me, I would have made it run away to the meadow. Same argument as before. The reason is Mishum Da'amalei, because in that case, the Shoyo can answer back. So if say, Bab Ma'aliyah Abam Shtalmi, fine, but after all, the animals are more. It's not being paid out of the value of the animal anyway. You anyway, it's anyway being paid Min Ha'aliyah from the best of you in the Chassid. So you making the animal run away to the meadow wouldn't have gotten you out of pay. Me, when the animal was by me and I thought it was a tam, if I'd made it run away to the meadow, that would have gotten me out of the tam.
Where does it get running the...
But here, where's the moor?
He loses the
animal. No, okay, so the Raivit says doesn't mean that you send it away there and you never see it again. It means, for example, that once out in the meadow there, you shecht it and you bring in the meat piece by piece. You end up getting something.
The meadow.
Then I would have been completely possible from
send
the
it to
the
last.
Yes, you
send it off.
Doesn't matter. It's already a moor. You would have been responsible to pay out of other property.
Don't forget, unless they care, you didn't have refrigeration.
Fine, you bring out 10 people over there, and each of them schleps a piece. Whatever, you can find it. Fine. Okay, I can understand this would work. Let's say that the Balabas has other nechassim. Then that's a valid argument. Then the Shoyo can say, after all, you would have been responsible to pay the whole thing anyway. So therefore, like this, if he doesn't have yet. What if there's no other nechassim other than the shor? Then what are you going to say? The answer is fine, but still mishum da amalei. Yes, but there is also this that the shoyo can answer to the balabas. True, but just as much as I have a shibud to you to pay back, to give back the animal that I borrowed from you, I also have a shibud to the other guy to pay the nezek. Midrash of nothing, based on the din of nothing. Tanya of nothing. I mean, not even
two obligations.
Well, in other words, I have an obligation to you. I have an obligation to return you your animal. I also have, because you are higher to that nizik, therefore, but transitively, I also have that to you. Because that to you, if I owe you money and you owe that guy money, it's the equivalent of I owe him directly. This is shibudid of nothing, which we learned about in Sukkot and Gittin. How do we know that if Reuven is owed a money by Shimon, and Shimon is owed a money by Levi, how do we know that we take it directly from Levi and give it to Reuven, and Levi does not have the ability to say, I have nothing to do with Reuven, I'll pay Shimon, that's who I borrow it from. Let Shimon deal with Reuven. No, we don't say that, we take it directly and give it to Reuven. Talmud Lomer, because the passage says, V'nosam asher osham lo. Because the passage says, you give it to the one to whom he owes. Which means the ultimate balfour. Yeah. How do you get to Mimala coming out? That's what I meant. Okay. How about now? Okay. So that explains the first half of the block. So that explains why we're saying that in the first half where the animal was thought to be tam and it turns out it's more, why we're saying each of them is high as Hatima. Fine. Now let's deal with the second half of the block. Kids, 10 more minutes and we will be done with it. Please control yourself. Now let's deal with the second. Who had the base shoyo? We said that if the animal became a moored in the house of the shoyo, that's zero la bailam, and then you return it to the owner. We say bailam mashaman chatinezik for shoyo potter mikul. It's about the middle of the arm. The line begins to work. So who had the base shoyo? So it became a moor in the house of the shoyo. Then he returns it to the owner. We say bailam mashaman chatinezik for shoyo potter mikul. So the owner pays chatinezik as if it was a tam. The shoyo potter mikul, and the shoyo was potter from anything. Question. Even though it was a moor, that's the question. Sefer reshus mashana reshus mashana. What are you telling me? That in the Sefer, we're saying the fact that it transfers Rishut from the Shoyal back to the Balabas resets the clock and therefore it goes back to being a Tam. And in the first case, when it was a Muad in the owner's house, it doesn't become a Tam when the Shoyal takes it over. What does that mean? Rav Yechanan's Tavla. So Rav Yechanan says, yes, it must be a Skira. Misha Shonazu, Lo Shonazu. Evidently, the Tana who taught one half of the Braisa is not the same half. It's not the same one who taught the other half. It's two different Tanoim. One holds Rishut Mishana, one holds Rishut Ein Mishana. Rabba Omar, Rabba says no. Midiresha Rashus Aini Mashana. If we say it's not a stira. If we say that in the Resha Rashus Aini Mashana, that the change of Rashus from the owner to the shoyal does not reset the clock and the animal remains on board, if we say that, which we have to say, because that's what it said, then sefer nami rishus ein mashana. Then if it's sefer also, the same thing would apply. The rishus, it does not in fact change. Really, the animal should still be considered a mu'ah. The sefer einu taima. So why do we say in the sefer that it goes back to being a tam in the sense that we said that the owner only has to pay hati nezek? Not because it really goes back to being a tam, but because the mishum de omalei, because the owner has the ability to say to the shoyel, lav kol kminach dimiyadis leila toroi. You do not have the ability to have made my animal be a mu'ah. Yes. Aegis was given three times in your presence, but you're not the owner of the shor after all. Therefore, the fact that it became a mu'ad in your possession, that's your problem, not mine. You don't have the rishus over this animal to be able to do that. Therefore, when it goes back to me, it has to, of necessity, go back to being a tam.
How can I do that?
Because that's what he's saying. Because
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, because he's saying that it wasn't yours. You weren't careful with it. So fine. From now on, if this animal damages, I'll be chayav chati nezek like I was until now. You'll be chayav the other chati nezek. But on the other hand, the fact is, the shoyel can argue, fine, but it's not in my rishus anymore. Therefore, I can't be chayav for anything because you're responsible to watch it. Therefore, he winds up being puzzled from the other half, and the bialim are going to still remain chayav and chati nezek like they were trying. Okay. Rav Papa says the other way around. Mid sefer rishus mishana, reishinami rishus mishana. No, kakev. If we say that in the second half of the braisa, going from the shoyel back to the owner resets the status and it becomes a tam again, then yes, we would have to say in the first half, lechora, it should do the same thing as well. The reisha ain't a tam. So why in the reisha are we saying that the animal started out of the tam, started out of the mu'ad, and still remains a mu'ad after the shoyel got it? The reason is, mishum the kolmakom shoyla b'shem bail of olam. Because regardless where the animal goes, the name of the owner is still on. Meaning it has not really changed rishus. Changing rishus would be, for example, you sold the animal, or it went from an apotropos back to the estate, or it went from the shoyel back to the original owner.
Borrowing it does not change the rishus.
Borrowing it does not change the rishus, exactly.
Lending it,
that's what I mean. Lending it does not change the rishus. Selling changes the rishus, because then it's permanently sold. But lending it still retains the ownership of the original person, and therefore it still retains the status. Yeah. The show borrowed it, but it still keeps the same status as it did.
Funny, because the Yiddish is the same word.
What?
The English.
What are you talking about?
Huh?
What are you talking about? Which words?
Lend and borrow.
Oh, yeah.
In Yiddish, it's only borrow.
Right.
Ich borg dir ein Dollar. Ich borg dir ein Dollar.
In English,
it's all up. In English, the owner is lending. It's not borrowing.
True. Yeah.